Okay, today is Parashas Noach, this Friday. Okay, the first idea I want to discuss is to contrast the Oirev and the Yonah. Okay, we have here in this Parsha, towards the end of the Mabul, the rain stops, the waters subside, the Teva lands, it comes to rest, and now it's a question of time. It's a question of time, when can they leave the Teva? So the first thing that Yonah does is, Vayishalach es ho'oirev, he sends out the raven. And the raven, Vayetze yotzov ha'shov, the raven goes in circles around the Teva, Yivosh ha'mayim al oretz, it went nowhere. The raven refused to go out on a mission to discover if the waters, the earth is ready for habitation. Let me read you the Rashi in Pasuk Zayin. This is Perek Zayin, Pasuk Zayin, two Zayins. Yotzoy v'shoyv, holech u'makiv sivoy sateh v'loy holach b'shluchusar. He didn't want to go anywhere. Shoyechoyshtoy al bazugoy chmoy shoshaninu bi'agodas chilek in l'gmor mesech the Sanhedrin. Noach sent out the raven. Zion, Zion, he sent out the raven. He sent out the raven to go out and check out the world and report back, to perhaps bring back in its mouth some piece of vegetation that would indicate that the world has, the waters have dried and things are growing. There is fruit and vegetables, and we can survive and we can leave the Teva. But the raven refused to go on its shlichus. Why? Because the Oirev was choshed Noach, that Noach would steal his wife. Okay, Noach would steal his wife, like it says in Masechta Sanhedrin. It's a very bizarre type of thing to understand. I once saw it in the Sefer, this is just a side point, that psychologists tell us that until a person is 20 years old, all he does the whole day is he thinks about himself. Think about yourself until you're 20 years old. It's not even possible to be masik to think about someone else. Be just obsessed with yourself. From 20 to 30, a person doesn't so much think about himself. He thinks already about other people. But he's always assuming that other people are thinking about him. It's madrega. Until you're 20 years old, you're in a bubble. It's all about me. Self-centered, 100%. 20 to 30, I realize there are other people out there. But I'm always wondering, I'm always assuming that they're thinking about me. When you get to 40, 30 to 40, when you reach 40, you begin to realize, you know what? They're not thinking about me. They're thinking about themselves. no one cares. No one cares about me. And then when you get 40 years old, Chazal say that a person becomes a chacham, wisdom, when he's 40 years old. And psychologists, modern day psychologists tell us that this is really, these two, what is chachma? Chachma is to realize, people aren't thinking about you. You don't really care about yourself. When once you get to a certain point, you get bored thinking about yourself the entire day. And as you mature, you begin to realize that people also are not thinking about you. People have their own problems and their own issues, and they don't think about you the whole day. So now, here you are, you're 40 years old, you've reached a degree of maturity, you don't think about yourself, you're not concerned about what other people think because you know that they're not thinking. Now you can begin to live. You can begin to live, that's already you're a chacham. You can begin to accomplish and do what you're supposed to be doing in this world. The Oirev here was very self-centered. He thinks, he was foolish to think that Noach is out to get him. Noach is trying to take away his wife. Noach has a lot more important things to think about and worry about than the wife of the Oirev. Okay, that's Stam a side point. Wait, but
the only animal you did that was
It was what?
The raven.
I'm not aware of that medrash. I don't know. Okay, I don't know. It could be. Okay. So here we have this was a failure. He sends the Oirev goes nowhere, it just circles and circles the Teva, no end. Then what happens? So Pasuk Ches, Perek Zayin Pasuk Ches. He sends out new tests. Vayishalach es hayoina. Oh, the yoina. Meito liros hakalu hamayim yalpene adama. V'lo motzo hayoina manoyach. In zmiros. V'lo yotzo hayoina manoyach l'chaf raglov. It returns, okay, at least it goes on the mission. It goes out. Goes over the entire world. So what happens? Vayachaloid shivas yom achirim vayosef shlach es hayoina min ateva. He sends that again, and this time the yoina comes back, and he brings in an alizayis. We'll discuss that in a few moments. Tanach befiya vayeda noyach kikalu hamayim yalaretz. Okay, very good. So we have here a contrast in parshas Noach between the yoina and the oirev. The oirev refuses to go out on its mission, whereas the yoina perek zayin pasuk zayin in ches, whereas the yoina is very willing to travel to fulfill its mission to be a shliach. Now there's another piece of Gemara in Masechta Chasam Sofer, focuses very much on this Gemara Masechta Sanhedrin. But Rashi does not quote this Gemara. Rashi just says this very bizarre Chazal that he was concerned about its mate and did not want to let Yoina Noach have access to its mate. There's another Gemara. The Yoina, when it was sent away, says to Noach, Noach, you're sending me on a very dangerous mission. We have no idea what's out there. The world has been destroyed. Everything has changed. The world is a different world. Who knows if I'll travel from one end of the world to the other end of the world to inspect the damage, I might be killed. The sar of fire, of heat, might burn me up. The sar, the master, the angel, the guardian angel of cold might cause me to freeze. It's unknown. It's a dangerous world out there now. Who knows? I may not survive the mission. And so what? If I don't survive the mission, that means that forever and ever there'll no longer be ravens in the world. I'll be extinct. No, the Yona, the Oirev. The Oirev. Oirev is a raven.
That's not what you set up here.
No, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. We're talking about the Oirev. The Oirev. I'm sorry, the Oirev, the first test. When Yona sent out the Oirev, again, Rashi quotes only one Medrash. One Medrash is that Yona, that the Oirev did not trust Noach. The Oirev suspected that Noach would steal its mate. There's another Gemara, let's put that aside. There's another Gemara in Masechta Sanhedrin. And the Oirev refused to go out and inspect the world because the Oirev said to Noach, it's dangerous, I may die, I may not survive, and then the world will be missing ravens. There will be no ravens, and all of my future descendants will not exist. I can't risk it. I'm too valuable to this world. There cannot exist a world without ravens. The line should end here. And if I refuse...
Was the raven separated from his wife?
In the Teva, they were all separated. No one was allowed to mate.
But
there were no...
later on about that.
They would...
Right.
Yonah is kosher, so there were seven of them. But the non-kosher, there was only one, a male and a female. And they did not yet reproduce at this point in time. So if I'm going to leave now, that's it. That's going to be the end. I don't want to risk. The risk is too great. It's a very valid argument. So what about the Yonah? Then Noach says, listen, Oirev's not going anywhere, it's circling, it's in a holding pattern. It's going around and around forever. So we need a new candidate, a new volunteer. Who wants to volunteer? The Yonah volunteers. Now, but the Yonah certainly knew the argument of the Oirev. The Yonah said, I don't care. I'm willing to risk to be Moiser Nefesh. I'm willing to be Moiser Nefesh and do Hashem's will, even though it may well be that I will cease to exist and my form of the Yonah may come to an end. So, yeah.
But there are seven pairs of Koshim and Mizrachim.
I hear the question. And this is what the Chasam Sofer says. I don't know the answer. I hear the question. So there are seven of them. So what will be the big deal? It could be that Yonah had to be mak of them as Kurbanos. So yeah, there's only one min. Only one min will be available for reproduction.
Okay.
Let's assume that.
The first argument, the
first line would not apply to the dove, because doves are always faithful to their mates.
Okay.
So he has no worries about his mate being unfaithful.
Aha. Uh-huh. With Noah. Okay, that's interesting. Okay. But the point we want to make is that we learn from this Gemara the difference between the Yonah and the Oirev. The Oirev was not willing to be Moiser Nefesh. The Yonah, that automatically tells us that the Yonah was willing to be Moiser Nefesh. Now, Pinchas Friedman, in his Sefer, what's the name of the Sefer called? Shvili Pinchas. So he says, now we can understand the famous Gemara it appears in a few places in Brachos and other places. I forgot where the Gemara is about Elisha Bal Kenafayim. What is the story of Elisha Bal Kenafayim? There was a time of Shmat, and you were not allowed to wear tefillin. And Elisha, this person, Elisha, he did not care. He wore tefillin in public. And finally, when the Romans caught up with him, he realized that his time has come. So he took off his tefillin, and they said to him, "What's in your hands?" And he said, "What's in my hands are kanfei yoina. I have doves are in my hand." And he opened up his hands, and a miracle happened. The tefillin turned into a yoina. That doesn't mean that they didn't catch him. They knew he was wearing tefillin. The question was, why did he compare his act of wearing tefillin to a yoina? From this Gemara, it's now very clear, because the yoina expressed its mesiras nefesh. Tefillin represent the idea, the ro'ol kol ame aretz kishem Hashem nikro lecha. Klal Yisrael has to be moister nefesh for the honor of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Klal Yisrael has to bring out in this world the shame Hashem in front of the nations of the world, not in leisure in your home. There has to be a degree of mesiras nefesh. Therefore, when this person, Elisha Bal Kenafayim, was moiser nefesh with tefillin, and it doesn't just mean tefillin, you have to remember the concept of tefillin. The concept of wearing tefillin meram is the concept of v'rohu kol amei ha'aretz ki shame Hashem nikra, to bring out the shame Hashem in the entire world in front of the nations of the world. It has to be done with mesiras nefesh, and that's why he compared his tefillin, his ma'aser, to a yoina, because the yoina is the one who expressed the mida of mesiras nefesh. Klal Yisrael is also compared to a yoina. That's the Gemara Chazal tells us. Why is Klal Yisrael compared to a yoina? Because of the same idea. Because Klal Yisrael, they're ma'aser nefesh on behalf of Kadosh Baruch Hu. Now I want to go a step further. It doesn't say this there in the Seder, but I think we can take the same exact principle and go the other way around. In the Beis Hamikdash, the time of the Bayis Sheni, on top there were different types of metal. There was gold, silver, and the choishes, but there was no barzel. And Chazal note, where was there? There was barzel, only in the Bayis Sheni. The kalya oirev, on the roof of the Beis HaMikdash, there were spikes. There are different opinions as to what exactly the kalya oirev means, but the problem was that ravens, from all the different birds, only ravens would come and would sit on top of the Beis HaMikdash. And in the time of the Bayis Rishon, this never happened. There was such intense Kedusha, a bird wouldn't dare come near the Beis HaMikdash. But during the time of the Bayis Sheni, where the Kedusha was diminished, the birds were not so afraid of the Beis HaMikdash. So ravens, only ravens, it says, would come and would sit on top of the roof of the Beis HaMikdash, which is disrespectful because they can defecate. And it's just not respectful. There should be birds. So they had to come up with some technique in order to remove the ravens, prevent them from landing. They put up this thing called the Kalia. Kalia means to bring an end to the Oirev, Kalia Oirev. What exactly was the Kalia Oirev? There are different opinions. Someone who was a scarecrow. Nothing more than a scarecrow. They put an image of a scary image which scared away the ravens. Other opinions learned that it was spikes. They were very tall, sharp spikes, blocks of spikes. Each one was one arm by one amma, and that prevented the ravens from landing. Now the question is, why from all of the different creatures, the only one that was trying to land in the Beis HaMikdash was the oirev? There are many birds. We have in Parashas Ra'eh 24 different types of non-kosher birds. And then the kosher birds, there's no end to the birds. Why from all the birds do we focus only on the oirev? So I think we can answer this with the Gemara Masech the Brachos and what we just said. The Gemara asks a very interesting question. Why is it that in the previous generations people were very successful in the koyach HaTzvila? When people davened, tzaddikim davened, they were answered right away. And our time, people can daven the whole day and night, say the tillim, daven, nothing doing. Nothing. The Gemara gives an example that in our time, we daven the whole day, nothing happens. But in the previous generation, I forgot the name of the Amora, even when it was at Seres Kishamim, it didn't rain, he would just have to, and when he started to remove his shoe, when he opened up his shoelaces to take off his shoes to begin the process of davening, it already began to rain. Why? So the Gemara says, oh, I have an answer. Because in the previous generations, there were very big Talmidei Chachamim. And today, we're Amaratzim compared to, the Gemara says, that's nonsense. Today, we're much bigger Talmidei Chachamim than there ever was in the past. In the previous generations, they would learn only four Siddurim. Today we learn Uksin. We know Seder Tyrus. Do you see what's going on in the Svarim stores? Bizman Azeh, we're much bigger Talmidei Chachamim than they were in the previous generation, so therefore that cannot be the reason. So then the Gemara says, what then is the reason? Because the previous generations, they were Meiser Nefesh. They were Meiser Nefesh. In our generation, when you turn up the heat, everyone drops out. There's no Mesiras Nefesh. We're Talmidei Chachamim, we're very good, we do Torah and Mitzvos, and this Chesed and Tzedakah. It's an incredible society. But when it gets hot, when there's pressure, everyone drops like flies. And there's no Mesiras Nefesh. In order that Hashem should listen to your tefillos, you should be on a level of a tzaddik, where Hashem will listen to your tefillos, you need that ingredient of Mesiras Nefesh. What is the Beis HaMikdash? The Beis HaMikdash is a Beis Tefillah. It's a Beis Tefillah L'chol Ha'amim, the Pasuk says. What's the whole Pasuk? Remember the Pasuk?
Ki Beis
Tefillah L'chol Ha'amim. Ki Karei L'chol Ha'amim. It's a Beis Tefillah. What is the most essential ingredient in Tefillah? Mesiras Nefesh. There are two creatures in this parasha, the Oirev and the Yonah. What's the difference? The Oirev didn't want to go on the mission. Why? I'm not being Moser Nefesh for this. All my descendants will come to an end if something happens to me. The Yonah was Moser Nefesh. The Oirev represents the Berea, the Yetzer Hara of no Mesiras Nefesh. What was attacking the Beis HaMikdash? The Oirev. They had to put on top of the Beis HaMikdash the Kalya Oirev. The Beis HaMikdash is a Beis Tefillah. The Gemara in Bracha says the most important thing a person needs in order that his Tefillah should be accepted in heaven is Mesiras Nefesh. You have to sweat in your Avodas Hashem. So what's the Kitroik? What's the Yetzar that's always trying to destroy the Beis HaMikdash? It's the Oirev. There are ravens that are always coming down to descend on the Beis HaMikdash. This is symbolic that in our Koyach HaTfilah, what's holding us then? What is preventing the Tfilos from ascending to heaven? The Oirev is, because the Oirev represents the Yetzar Hara, not to be Meiser Nefesh. And when there's no Mesiras Nefesh, you can sit and daven the whole day and bring all the Kabbanos you want. Nothing's going to happen. Chazal had to put on the roof a Kali Oirev. They had to do things in order to push away the earth. People should be inspired to be Moiser Nefesh. It's the symbol of art. What? That's an extension of the Shvili Pinchas. So let's recap. Recap, in this week's parasha, there are two creatures. The Oirev versus the Yoina. Like you have Mordechai and Haman, and always the protagonist, the antagonist. You have always the two, who are the two of this parasha? The Oirev and the Yoina. The Oirev is no Mesiras Nefesh. The Yoina is Mesiras Nefesh. And you find two examples. Yibilisha Baal Kinafayim. It's Mesir Nefesh. That's why he said it's a Yoina. Ki Shem Hashem Nikro Lecha. Verohu Kolam Yaretz. Be Mesir Nefesh. Yoina. Kanfe Yoina. And where do you find the opposite? The Beis HaMikdash, the Beis Tefillah. What does Gemara say? You need Mesiras Nefesh. The Oirev is always coming down to attack. Okay, that's one idea. Let's go to another idea. The Teva came. What? Yes.
Defense of the Oirev.
Yes, defense of the Oirev, okay.
No,
okay, yes.
I mean, I'm telling you, we're going to drop you behind enemy lines.
Okay.
Do you have a right to be chicken?
Okay, let me give you another example. Let me make your question even better. In the Torah, there are three Averis Chamuros. Avoy Dezara, Gili Arayo, Shvichas Damen. Okay? A person is mechuyev to give up his life not to violate one of these three averos. Mechuyev. Mechuyev. Let me ask you. Let's say a person is presented with being forced to do one of these averos, and he says, I'm scared. I'm giving in. I'm going to do the avera. I'm scared. I just can't do it.
I agree.
Let me. So, what is the halacha? Does he lose his chelik in Olam Haba? No. Oines rachmana patre. Was he mechuyev to give up his life? 100%. Yes. Yes. You mechuyev. But if you can't control yourself. It's just too hard. You're exempt because you were forced to do the avera. The Eiv is not a bad creature, but he was asked by Noach, and Noach was another, I don't know all the terms, but he was a very, very holy person. The Ishei HaTanach are not simple people. He was asked by Noach, doesn't say that about other people. That's a serious statement. Noach was a holy person. He told the Yonah to do, gave him a mission. He's the Oireif is criticized. It's a dangerous mission. He's being dropped behind enemy lines. But if Noach selected the Oireif, he should have done it. He had an obligation to do it. He didn't. He didn't do it. Okay, so you can't criticize the Oireif and just not visit him in the zoo. He'll get his visit, but. He lost out.
Maybe,
the Oirev lost out.
Maybe Noah saw that the Oirev would be the protagonist on Mesa Mingus Rishani.
It's all part of the same thing. It's all the same thing. It's the Nida. The Nida.
No, he tries to get rid of him now.
Aha, so uh-huh, he's trying to be Mesak in it now. Okay.
Okay.
So let's go further. We'll go to another idea. We have the Mabel. Question is, after the Mabul was over, Hashem says, I'm never going to destroy the world again. Why not? Why not? If man is evil, and man was capable of doing sins, if man is so evil, and he was able to strike out before the Mabul, so what changed after the Mabul when man is no longer able to be the cause of Hashem destroying the world? Very basic question. Before the Mabul, we know that the world was a beautiful world, and man lived, man had the ability to live even to the 1,000 years. Adam lived to 930 only because he gave away 70 years. But otherwise, he would have lived to 1,000. We see all the people before Parshas Noach, they lived in 800 years, 700 years, 600 years. It appears that the maximum life expectancy was 1,000 years. After the Mabul, Hashem says 120 years is the max. And to reach that, it was also a major feat if a person can reach anywhere near that. Yeah.
Climate change,
so obviously everything changed. Hashem changed. Why? What exactly happened? So Chazal say, I don't have a source for this. You have to trust me. She never do. But I don't know where there are a source. The sources there are Mamari Chazal that tell us that after the Mabul, Hashem took away a person's ability to sin. In other words, it's hard for us to understand this. A person can sin, of course, there's no question about it. But there's a limit how evil a person, how far a person can go. Now, I know it's a hard thing to say. You look at the Nazis, you look at what happened in World War II, you see how far man can go. But we have to have a muna that even though it's beyond imagination, things that we've seen, man can be even worse. There's a possibility to be even worse than this. We don't understand, but this is the difference between before the Mabul and after the Mabul. Before the Mabul, you know, it's always Zeluma Zebra looking. Hashem created this world with an incredible potential of to do good, to for kedusha. But Zeluma Zebra looking, the ability for man to rebel, the rishis, the ability to be wicked was so great, it matched the holiness that existed before the Mabul. Man had such potential to do evil, his wickedness can cause HaKadosh Baruch Hu to decide to destroy the world. After the Mabul, HaKadosh Baruch Hu to a certain degree took away the Kedusha, And Hashem also took away man's ability to rebel and to sin to the degree where Hashem would get so angry, he would have decide to destroy the entire world. Hashem took away man's bechira. Not totally, of course, we have bechira today, we have a yetzar today, people do all the strangest things, like we've seen, but we have a munah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he took away man's bechira to go off the deep end. The aflog, they did sin, but their sin did not match what could have been, what they could have done that would anger Hashem to the degree where Hashem would want to destroy the world. What?
I mean, in the beginning Hashem only had din.
Right. Then Hashem was mishtatef with rachamim.
If he was going to do this, if he was going to insist on only din, then he's got to wipe out everybody. Now he's changed his way of doing the world.
Okay, but that was the Be'echam. It's all true, but there's a fundamental change between before the Bible and after the Bible. Man's Bechir was diminished. Now, I want to bring a rye, I want to bring a remiss to this from a very interesting point in the parasha. Where did the Teva come to land? The Teva came to land Al Horei Ararat. Now, I don't have here the Gemara in front of me, so let me just tell you. You look at the Gemara later on, it's in Gemara Masech Psot Ararat. What everything the Torah records has great significance. Why was it necessary for the Torah to tell us where the table rested, came to land? What difference does it make? Ararat, maybe came to rest on Har Sinai, Har Hamaria. What difference does it make where the table came to land?
But it did.
What? Why does it make a difference? Why does the Torah have to record? The Torah only records things that teach us a lesson. So there's something very interesting about the mountain Horei Ararat that's not true about any other mountain. And this appears in the Gemara Masechta Pesachim on Daf Zayin Amud Aleph. You can look it up later on. The Gemara talks about Pesachim. Masechta Pesachim, Daf Zayin Amud Aleph. The Gemara talks about a situation where a man wants to marry a woman. And he gives her for Kedushin, you must give a woman a pruta. You must give a woman an item that's worth at least a shava pruta. Let's say a man gives a woman chometz on Pesach. It's Pesach. It's after Chatzos, Erev Pesach, when the prohibition of chametz is already in effect. And he picks up a piece of chametz and he gives it to the woman and says, here is a piece of chametz. Harei at nekudesh asli with this piece of chametz. Is he married to this woman? So the answer is no. Because after Chatzos, it's worthless. It's Hefker. Chazal have taken this chametz out of your Rishus. It has absolutely no value. The Torah has removed it from your Rishus. It's no longer yours. It has to be destroyed. It's worthless. Then the Gemara says, well, let's say a man gives a woman chametz, something which is only chametz midrabanan. It's not minat Torah. It's matzah. It's kosher. If it's matzah, you can eat it. There's no prohibition. It has value. It can be sold in the market. However, the Rabbanan said that we're machmir. We feel that this type of bread borders on chametz for whatever reason. And if we're going to prohibit this piece of bread midrabanan, so the Gemara says, guess what? Even if it's only called chametz midrabanan, it's not a kedushin. It's worthless, has no value. The Rabbanan have removed its value on their level, and something which is worthless cannot be used as an object to marry a woman. The Gemara gives an example. What's an example of a piece of bread that's only yosem midrabanan, that's not chametz deraisa? It's bread that has been made with chitim, wheat from the place called Kurdon Nisa. It's a place. It's a place in the world. It's called Kordon Nisa, and wheat grows, regular wheat. You have a field, you plow, you plant, you harvest, you have wheat, and you take the wheat and you make it into flour, and you add water. Guess what? This wheat will never turn into chametz. Regular flour, if you add water and you let it sit for 18 minutes, what happens? It turns into chametz. This wheat is magic wheat. What? This wheat is magic wheat. This wheat, for whatever reason, it grows in an environment. It grows in a very strange environment where it's very dry. I don't know the exact environmental details, but for whatever reason, it looks like wheat. It tastes like wheat. But if you'll take this wheat and you let it sit in water and soak in water for 18 minutes, it's just not going to ferment to the point where it's considered in halacha It's not going to decay where it's in halacha considered minat Torah chametz. However, it's wheat. It looks like wheat. It tastes like wheat. Everything is wheat, wheat. So the Rabbanan said, if you're going to make exceptions, different types of wheat, you're going to have a nightmare. People are going to get confused. It's not going to be good for the kashrus industry. Therefore, blanket iser leplug, it's aser mid Rabbanan. Okay. Now, let me ask you, what is this place called Kordonisa? What is it?
Cardonia.
Now, Rashi, these are Rashi. Go look up the Gemara. Rashi himself, so of Zayin Amid Aleph. And Rashi says, Kordonisa is Hore Ararat.
Yes.
The mountain of Ararat.
When Haman to find
He went to Kordonisa.
Cardonia,
where the Teva landed. Haman took, he needed a bina that was 50 amos tall to hang Haman. He went to Hore Ararat, and the Medrash, Hore Ararat is called Kordonisa, so that proves Rashi's point that Kordonisa is the same thing as Hore Ararat. Now, let's shift into Pesach mode. All the children are taught, why is it Osir? Why do we have to burn Chametz? Erev Pesach. Why is chametz prohibited for 7 days of the year? Because chametz, these are Kabbalistic things which everyone talks about, so I'm not apologizing because this is like Aleph Beis, and even in the world of Halacha, chametz represents, it's called the Se'or Shebi'is, the yeast of dough, and the Se'or Shebi'is in Kabbalistic literature is the Yetzirah. The chametz is the Yetzirah. And if 7 days a year, Yetzirah is a good. He's our friend. We need the Yetzirah in order to live. There was no Yetzirah, no one would get married. There was no Yetzirah, no one would eat. People need a little shtickle Yetzirah. We just got to keep the guy in control. You got to keep him in control. So the whole year round, you let him free. You take him out of the cage. But to show who's boss, 7 days a year, we lock him up. And by locking him up for 7 days a year, Pesach, that already shows the world, shows him, and shows us who's boss and everything, Shalom Ali Shal. So 7 days a year we take him, we burn him, we torture him, and we no waterboarding because that would make him chametz. So we have to other means of torture.
Eliminate.
We eliminate him 7 days a week. The Sa'ar Shabisa. The Teva, so chametz, it represents the Yetzirah. Why did the people sin before the Mabul? Before the time of the Mabul, they couldn't control their Yetzirah. There was Arayos, there was Chomos, all these terrible things were happening in the world because the Yetzirah was extremely powerful. Hashem brought a Mabul, and the Mabul came, the Teva came for the survivors of the Mabul, they came to rest on Hore Ararat. On Hore Ararat, there's no Yetzirah. There's no Sar Shabi'isa. Hore Ararat, there's Chitin, there's wheat. The wheat doesn't turn into chametz. There's no Yetzirah. What's different now, the survivors are now being taught a lesson. You're being put into a new world. And in this new world, the Yetzirah has been diminished. Even if you want to sin, you won't be able to sin. Hashem has changed man's personality. Hashem has limited man's bechira. Don't get me wrong, we have bechira. That's why we're in this world, to choose between good and bad. That's, otherwise there would not be a world. But man's bechira has been diminished, at least to the degree where he can't do evil to anger Hashem, to destroy the world once again. Originally Hashem made a world where you have so much bechira. There's so much bechira, you can do sins that Hashem will get so angry at us, he'll destroy the world. Hashem took away that degree of bechira. We'll never come to that level. And that is hinted, it's intimated in the fact that the Teva came to land on Hore Ararat, where there is no Sa'ar Shabi'isa. And that's why the Torah is telling us that the Tanakh HaTeva al Hore Ararat. Okay, so this is an idea taken out of the Gemara, Pesachim Dav Zayin Amid Aleph, Chitei Kordonisa, there's no Chametz Deraisa. Okay, now let's go to another idea. Okay, now this is more of a more of an observation. Okay, observation type of an idea. It's not necessarily something you have to think about. It's not I don't have a real thought, but an observation. There are two sins in this week's parasha. The sin of the Mabul, the people of the Mabul, they were evildoers, right? They kimola ha'aretz chomos mitnehem, v'hinni mashchisam min ha'aretz, Hashem destroyed the world. And then there's another sin, the Darflaga. Everyone got together, and we're going to make a big tower, we're going to rebel. The Gemara in Masechet Sanhedrin elaborates what exactly were they thinking. There were three different groups. One wanted to rebel, one wanted to do this. I don't know all the details, whatever, but it was basically they were rebelling against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the fundamental difference between the first two, there are two major differences between the first sin and the major sin. First of all, what was the sin and what was the punishment? The first sin was primarily a sin bein Adam l'chaveray. Ki mala ha'aretz chamas. Chamas is a very hard word to translate. Rashi here says gezel. Gezel. But nigzar gzaydinim elala. Gezel, chamas is theft. In Tanakh, it doesn't always mean gezel. It can mean a whole collection of things. It means violence, which is shrichas damim. One thing leads to another. But okay, but basically the common denominator of chamas is bein adam l'chavero. God was not a factor in the sin. Certainly in this gezel, so you're rebelling against HaKadosh Baruch Hu also, but the main, the primary focus of sin was man was not good to his fellow man. And what was the punishment? The world is over. The world is destroyed. We're going to start fresh. Dar haflaga, what was the sin? Adam lamakoim. It says the words, we're going to rebel against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're going to build a tower. And we're going to go up. One, we're united. We're going to go. They were united. And we're going to go to heaven. And we're going to fight with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They're going to go to heaven. They're going to manipulate, take the heavens. All right. And what happened? Hashem didn't destroy the world. No, it's okay. You want to fight with me? It's okay. I'm not gonna. Just get out of here. Disperse. I'm going to confuse you. Everyone's going to have a different language. And you're not going to be able to get along with each other. And therefore, everyone's going to be dispersed. So you won't be able to come together and rebel against me. Okay, so that's the basic difference between the first sin. It's the sin bin Adam Chaver and the punishment. The second sin bin Adam Makam and its punishment. Now, let's go a little bit deeper. I saw this in Rav Pam. And other Mepharshim say the same idea. Focusing on the chait of the dar hamabel. The mabul. It says in the pasuk, "Hinni mashchisam min ha'aretz." Rashi on the pasuk says, the very beginning of the parasha, that when Hashem destroyed the world, not only did He destroy man, He also destroyed the first three tefachim of the ground, the earth, the topsoil. The topsoil was obliterated, and Rashi says, "Why three tefachim? Why 1, 2, 3? Because that's the oinek hamacharesha." The depth of the plow. Now, today I'm sure the modern plows go a lot deeper than that, but the ancient plow, standard size was 3 tefachim. So the question is, what is Rashi telling us that the reason that Hashem destroyed 3 tefachim? Because those 3 tefachim correspond to the depth of the machareisha, the plow. What is Rashi telling us over here? So Rav Pam Zichron Levracha explains that, and this is based on Midrashim, why did the Dor HaMabul, what brought them to sin? What's the cause of their sin? So we have to go back to Parashas Bereishis. There was a person called Lemech. Lemech had a son. Who was Lemech's son? Noach. Zeh, and he called him Noach. Zeh yinachaneinu mi'itzoin yodeinu min ho'adam asher eru Hashem. Rashi says that Noach was an inventor. He invented, well, there are different midrashim digits, right? The how many fingers a person, that's a different point. But Noach invented the plow. He, and the Midrash explains that until the time of Noach, how did people occupy their time? What did they do the whole day? The whole day, from morning until night, they were busy working in the land. Because in order to plant, you have to plow, soften. How do you soften the land? You go outside and you take your hands and you dig in the ground with your hands and you soften the land. Now that takes a long time. If you have a big field, can you imagine going every single corner of the field, every single inch of the field, and putting your hands into the ground and softening the soil and doing it again and again, and then planting the seeds and coming back and softening it again. This takes forever. And that's exactly what they did the whole day. They went out to the fields and they used their bare hands to soften the ground. Along came Noach, and Noach says, what are you wasting your time doing this the whole day? Let's invent a tool called a machareisha, a plow, a blade, a simple thing, and we'll attach this blade to an animal, and we'll, or even a person, will pull it, and we'll be able to soften a large segment of land in a matter of seconds. Noach was the person who invented the machareisha. He won the Nobel Prize for this. Plow. Now, now people had leisure time. They were able, what took them a whole day to do, they were able to accomplish in a matter of minutes. So now what do you do the rest of the day? There was no coil all those days. So what do they do? What do you do? What do you do? You indulge in the finer things of life. Good food, wine, one thing leads to another, and then there's affluence, and then there is gaiva, and then there is all society broke loose, and society became corrupt, and ultimately kimola haaretz chamas. There was theft and violence, and every sin was committed. All because, says the Medrash, what?
Why was it a good thing?
It wasn't a good thing. It wasn't, exactly. Why? Because they had too much time on their hands. That's what it says in the Medrash.
Create the invention like we did.
So we look back in history, so you look at the invention of the plow. Was it a good thing or a bad thing? So on the one hand, well, it really depends. If a person would have occupied himself with good things, with learning and with accomplishing and doing wonderful things, then the technology was a blessing. But if the technology was the cause of a curse, of it being it itself being used for bad things, that it wasn't. It wasn't used for bad things, but it just was a tool which now freed up people's time, and now they were able to do things which they didn't know what to do themselves, and that caused them to do averos. It wasn't necessarily a good thing. It was in retrospect, they would have been a lot better off if the plow wasn't invented. At least this way, the world would not have been destroyed. The whole world was destroyed. Everyone came to an end. The quality of life was greatly diminished because the plow was invented. So this is the Musar Hasid. So the basic Yisod of Rapam is that when there are advances in technology, it's a double-edged sword. On the one hand, it's an incredible bracha. It can be used for incredible blessing, for bracha, for this incredible potential. But it's a very great danger, because when you're advanced in technology, that same technology can be used, Rahman al-Utslan, for not such good purposes, or can change the entire environment where now people do not know how to conduct themselves. So you have to be very, very careful with every new advance in technology, like the plow. Okay, fine. Now, what? No, of course not. Of course not. He's not held accountable for this. He did something good. It's not Israel's fault that other people are foolish and sinned with his what?
Other people misuse.
Every single thing can be used for good or bad. A telephone can be used for good, it can be used for bad. Everything. What? Oh, so that explains. That's why Kadosh Baruch Hu, I forgot to follow up. That's why Kadosh Baruch Hu destroyed the three tefachim of the ground. The earth was destroyed. But the machresha, because the machresha, the oimek hamachresha, is reminded that the oimek hamachresha was the cause of the world being destroyed. Because they abused technology. They abused technology. That's why the world was destroyed. That's why Hashem, a permanent reminder, the topsoil was destroyed. Okay, that's what Rapam says. Beautiful vart in its own right. Now, I want to go weiter. Let's go to the Dor HaFlaga. The Dor HaFlaga was also due to an advance in technology. I saw this vart is said by many people, but I saw it by Franz in the Friend on the parasha, in the first day, I think they already three volumes. So in the first volume, or a friend, this week's parasha, Parashas Noach, in the end, towards the end, in one of his books, Friend on the Parasha, so he explains what exactly was the cause, why did the people of Dor HaFlaga did they decide to join forces and rebel against HaKadosh Baruch Hu? What got into them?
Friend
on the parsha, volume 1, Parshas Noach. What? Volume 1. So he explains, Vayihi chol aretz sofo echos. The whole world was one language. Everyone spoke internet protocols. Internet protocols. Everything was old stuff, achas, right? Udvarim achadim. Vayi benasam ikedim. Vayimsu biko. They found the valley of Eretz Shinar. Vayeshu shem. Vayomu yishalachiv. Ah! Hava, come. On Perek Yud Aleph Pasuk Gimel. Hava nilbina levenim. Let's build bricks. V'nishrafa l'sreifa. What does that mean? So the pasuk really explains. Vatehi luchem halaveinim lo'oven. V'achemar hoi luchem lachomer. There was an advance in technology. A new advance in technology at this point in time. Until now, when you want to build a house, how do you build a house? Until this point in time, you want to build a structure. You need stones. Yeah, a little cement. You'd have stones and cement, you build a house. Now, where do you get stones from? The ground.
Yeah.
How many stones are you going to find in the ground? Not that many.
Right.
You're very limited. If you want to go build a house, you need stones. Do you want to throw stones at someone on Shabbos? You're limited. How many stones already could you throw? You have to go and produce the stones. So if you want to build a building, how big already could you build the building? How many stones are you going to dig up? You know how much work it is to go and dig up stones? And how many stones are you going to get already? Alright, so you'll work for many years, you'll build a nice structure. You want to go build all the way to Shemayim, you want to go up all the way to outer space, so you need a lot of stones. Impossible. Impossible to build a structure that will go all the way to Shemayim. But there was an advance in technology. Artificial stones. It says here, this is an extremely important passage, the Levena means the mud. Right? The Levena means the brick. The brick. A brick became a stone. They figured out how to make bricks. Because in Shinar, in Bavel, the earth is very... The earth is a clay. It's a certain type of earth. It's not found in America. Special earth from Babylon. Special earth which is like a clay. And you add a little water, some other ingredients. You can make a brick. Bricks? You don't need stones. You can take earth and make bricks. The sky's the limit. There's no longer a limitation on construction. If construction was done in the traditional way of using stones, but they found a solution. They found a technique, an advance in technology, to take earth and make that earth into a brick, and now we can use that in place of stones, and we can go all the way to Shemayim. We can build structures that are massive, that are so massive, that can go all the way out of the Rakia, and we can rebel against the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Again, an advance in technology. And that's what now we have advanced. We can now rebel against Hashem. Where is Hashem? Hashem is in Shemayim? We're going to go to Shemayim to wage war. Until now we couldn't do it because we only had stones. Now we have artificial stones. We're not limited. We can now go and all the way to Shemayim and wage war. So look at this. The sin of the Mabel came because of an advance of technology of the Maharesha. The sin of Bavel, the tower of Bavel, came because of advance in technology of artificial bricks. And they rebelled. Now let's go take a step back. What was the sin of the Mabel? Adam la Chavero.
Right.
What was the punishment? The world is destroyed. What's the sin of Adam la Mokoim? What was the Bavel? Adam la Mokoim. Adam la Mokoim. And what was the rebellion? The rebellion is... And what was the punishment? Vayefutsu. So now here's my observation. Observation is... Look, you have to study history. In history, there are always advances in technology. There are two different types of advances. There are inventions, like the Maharesha. The Maharesha is an invention. Take a piece of metal, you make a tool. Take some metal, you dig up some ore, some raw material, and you take that tool and you use it to accomplish something. Then there's an advance in technology where you don't create tools. You manipulate the environment. You're able to do things with the environment, not create tools that you previously were unable to do. Here, they didn't create tools by Babel, the Tower of Babel. They didn't make a tool. They took the same earth, and they were able to manipulate the earth that it can serve as an artificial stone. So very different type of advance between the Mabul and Bovel. Mabul, they invented a device, an iPhone. iPhone 5. It's a device. It's a tool. It's a kli. You invented a car. You invented an airplane. You created a tool. And with this tool, we could do new things that we could never have done before. Dor Hamab, Dor Hafloga, they didn't create a tool. They discovered a new raw material. And with that raw material, they were able to do things that they couldn't otherwise do until now. They used the raw material called stone. Now they just found a different raw material, and that raw material served as a replacement for stone. They didn't invent a tool. It was a manipulation of the environment, of the Chomer itself. And if you study history, it's very interesting that there's a parallel. When man invents tools, that generally leads to sin, where there's a Yetzirah of sins ben Adam l'chavera. Cars, planes, all different types of tools causes a whole new environment of gezel. And sometimes you have to think if this is true. Maybe it's not true what I'm saying, but I think there's something here. Every time in history where new inventions are made, that leads to new social, a whole new social set of rules. A whole new problems of this new wealth. There's new talent. You can do things now to your fellow man that you could never do. Now that you have a telephone, a cell phone, you can speak Lashon Hara like you never could before. Before there was a telephone, before there was a telegraph, you couldn't speak Lashon Hara. You couldn't. The harm you can do to man was extremely limited. Now that there are new tools in this world, you can do incredible chesed, but you also can do incredible harm. Environment. We discover a new source of energy. Coal, oil, natural gas, solar. When we discover in society how we can clean water, we have these facilities where we can take filthy, dirty water and we can now make the water clean. What does this lead to? We don't need the Ribbono in the Shalala. It always results in a rebellion. We're independent. There's no need for religion. There's no need to relate to God because man is self-sustaining. Man can take care of himself. Man does not need God. There's a parallel, Maisa of Asim Labanim. The point I want to make is there are two sins in the parasha. Der Hamabel, Der Afloga. Der Hamabel bin Adam Lachaveroi. Der Afloga bin Adam Lamokoim. Der Hamabel and Der Afloga both came about through advance in technology. The Der Hamabel came about advanced technology of a tool, a Macharesha, an invention. Der Afloga came about advanced technology in the environment. In the environment. They're related. When there's an advance, there's an invention, there's a Yetzirah to rebel against your friend. It can lead Chas V'Shalom to Chamas if you don't keep it in check. When there's an advance in technology, in the environment, what does that lead to? Ribbono Shel Olam, we don't need you. We're self-sufficient. We have water, we have fuel, we have energy, we have enough forever. We don't need.
Keep your rain, we don't need it.
Exactly. This is the Yetzirah that continues to perpetuate throughout all generations, and it's all mushrush here in this week's parasha. Min ho adama, and the choymer, the levena became the oven, the levena, the brick which comes from the mud, from the earth, which is a novelty. Wow, we don't need stones anymore. We can take a clump of earth and make that into a brick, and then we can go all the way to Shemayim. We can rebel against the One on high. You have to study this, but I think this idea is true throughout the entire history. Okay, we'll stop here. Have a wonderful Shabbat.